Yes, but fortunately for the spirit, the law of mine and thine is not in existence in the spirit world. There is plenty for all there, as there is here. Your false customs make it right for one person to have more than enough, while his neighbor is starving. It is not so in the spirit world, but the blessings of the infinite spirit are free for all, and no one can claim more as their own than they can well appropriate. There is no hoarding there, you can have all you need, but no more. By Thomas Paine, January 20, 1870. Question. It is worthy of notice that Indian spirits, on their return, so far as we are able to judge, exhibit a greater amount of truthfulness, and express less regret of their conduct in earth life, than spirits who have passed from what is denominated highly civilized and refined society. How is this? Are civilization, education, and so-called refinement detrimental to spiritual progress? Answer. That the Indian lives nearer to nature, and thus nearer to nature's God, is a well-attested fact. They demonstrate this fact as they return from the other life to you, and they demonstrate it here, before they pass on to that other life. Could you live with them in their homes and become thoroughly acquainted with them, you would see that they live nearer to nature and to nature's God than you do. Civilization is the result of art. The more civilized you are, the farther you are from nature. The Indians who return to you are more truthful, and for this cause, they are more simple. They tell you their story in their own simple language, they make use of no art, they do not clothe their ideas so that you cannot understand them, they have no desire to mislead you, no motive to carry you away from the truth. They intuitively, in the other life, feel your need of truth, and feel as intuitively that they are to become the agents in the hands of the Great Spirit to lead you to truth. They feel that the Great Spirit has bestowed many blessings upon you that he has withheld from them, but they are anxious to tell you what the Great Spirit has done for them, what they see, by what they are surrounded, how they live in the other life, and they tell it in such a plain, simple manner, that you cannot misunderstand them. This was at page 368. Question. The writer knows a lady medium in New York who has a small dog that will never rest while she is giving seances, except in her lap, or behind her, in the chair. She states that when she herself, or her son, the only other member of the family, is sick, this dog is always sick, too, and exhibits symptoms of a like malady. An Indian spirit, who sometimes controls the medium, avers that the dog is a spirit medium. Will the controlling influence please throw some light on the matter, if a practicable, and oblige one who has at length learned that it is not safe to deny anything outside of pure mathematics, and hardly then? Answer. Everything, from the smallest atom to the largest body in life, is a medium for spirit, everything, and the higher you rise in the scale of human progress, or natural being, the larger and more perfectly defined are the mediumistic qualities of the thing, the individual, the animal, the atom, it may be. It is absolutely useless, in these days of investigation, to say that animals cannot be influenced by spirit power. You know very well that you can influence them here by a look, by simply fixing your attention upon them. You can psychologize them, you can magnetize them. You can invest them with certain qualities of your own life. Now, if you, in the body, can do this, certainly they who are out of the body, and know more about the laws of these things, can do far more. I have no knowledge of this particular case to which you refer, but I have no doubt myself that the Indian has correctly informed the lady. By Father Henry Fitz-James, January 24, 1870. Question. Is it possible, while a medium is entranced, and the medium's spirit away from his body, for the magnetic cord uniting the medium's spirit with his body to be severed, and the spirit controlling still keep possession of the medium's body and manifest through it, and all the processes of life go on as before, for any great length of time? Answer. No, it is not possible, because diametrically opposed to the laws of nature and spirit. Question. It has been said, through Mrs. Conant, that spirits change their forms, as humans do theirs. Now, if this is so, I would inquire if, upon such change, the spirit assumes a form invisible to spirit vision, or to the spirit friends left behind, as is the case with us humans when we die, or change the mortal form for the spiritual. And is death, or change of form, in spirit life, similar in its attendant circumstances to death in the earth life? Answer. Spirits are constantly changing their forms. They are constantly laying off what they have no longer need of, and gathering to themselves what they have need of. There are certain marked changes in the spirit world that take place with reference to the spirit and its body, in that world, as there are here with you. There are changes that are equivalent to the change you call death. Spirits passing from lower to higher degrees in life, become invisible to those who remain beneath them. They take on more sublimated forms. They come out of the degree of life that belongs to those who are beneath them, and therefore those dwelling in that sphere cannot see them any more than you can see those who dwell where I do. By Father Henry Fitz-James, January 25, 1870. Question. Benjamin Franklin, the philosopher and philanthropist, has recently been seen in the city of New York. 370 You would have pledged your solemn oath that he was present, and yet he may have been a million leagues from the place of the chemical manifestations. Will you explain? Answer. Spirits have the power to project likenesses of themselves to almost any distance from their spirits. For instance, they may wish to show you the external, the objective part of their being here in Boston, while they themselves, their thinking part, may be in London, or perhaps in the farthest distant star. By the science of chemistry, in the spirit world, this is done. Those who have given such demonstrations tell us that it is simply and easily learned. Question. When they show themselves to the clairvoyant, are they able to convey their thoughts in the objective form? Answer. Yes, because there is a magnetic connection between the image and the spirit of their thought. They can understand your thoughts, and can answer them. Question. And can they project these bodies to different persons at one and the same time? Answer. Yes. Question. Is it because your mode of thought is so much more rapid than ours? Answer. Yes, and so much more volatile. You have well attested accounts of the appearance of apparitions of persons who are still in the body. Spirits who have made this science a study, tell us that these apparitions are not always the result of will on the part of the spirit from whom they are projected, but they sometimes come as an electrical consequence of their mental condition. Question. Can a spirit be seen in different localities at the same time? This was at page 371. Answer. Not the spirit, but the spirit form can. Question. There is a lady whom I have never seen, who testifies to my presence and power to relieve her from extreme suffering, in some manner wholly unknown to me in my external consciousness. Is such a thing possible? Answer. Certainly it is. Question. Is there a spiritual sphere surrounding each planet, separate and distinct from every other planet? Answer. There is a spiritual sphere surrounding every single object of being, however small or however great, therefore there must be one surrounding every planet. In that sphere spirits of course dwell. Question. Can they pass from one to the other? Answer. Certainly they can. Question. Will they be recognized in the other planets as spirits of human beings? Answer. Yes. Question. Can they communicate with one another? Answer. Yes. Question. Can we obtain likenesses of our spirit friends through media? Answer. Provided the medium can be used by the spirits who desire to represent themselves. Not without. By Father Henry Fitz-James, January 27, 1870. Question. Was the Witch of Endor a medium? Answer. In all human probability she was, but wherefore do you call her the Witch of Endor? Question. She is called so in the Bible. Answer. No, you are mistaken. She is not called so in the Bible. The Bible speaks of her as the woman of Indah. Question. Had the Salem witchcraft anything to do with spiritualism? Answer. It certainly was a phase of modern spiritualism. Question. Do those that have lived in mortal life carry their guidance to spirit life? And can they control our circumstances here? Answer. They are often permitted through natural and divine law to come and assist you to remain here. They carry their love with them, and all the purposes that fill the soul pass on to the spirit life with the soul. Question. Can those who have transgressed the laws of this life, by the law of progression, control and guide us to purity? Answer. They certainly can. Question. What is it causes men to do wrong, the human or the spiritual? Answer. That is a difficult question to answer. Since humanity, apart from spirit, could not act, we are to suppose that if the spirit does wrong or evil at all, it does so in consequence of the spiritual forces, not of the material. Question. Has the spirit power to keep the carnal in subjection? Answer. The spirit has control over all matter. Question. Then can wrong result from it? Answer. Seemingly wrong, or the lesser good. Question. Is not humanity sometimes in the ascendant? Answer. No, I do not so understand it. Matter never gains the ascendancy over spirit. By Joseph Löwenthal, February 8, 1870. Question. Does insanity affect the spirit after it leaves the body? Answer. Only relatively. There is no permanent effect left upon the spirit. It is but a temporary shadow. There are no insane spirits. They sometimes make insane manifestations, in consequence of the inharmonious condition of the organism through which they must manifest, but that is all. Question. According to that theory, a spirit could not manifest its real self, except through a physical organism corresponding to its former self. Answer. Yes, that is a correct inference. Question. And the more nearly the organism corresponds to that of the spirit, the more nearly you get the conception of the spirit? Answer. Yes. Question. Does color or complexion go with the spirit to the spirit land? Answer. Yes, relatively. Since it does not proceed from the external, but comes from the internal to the external, it must of necessity be deep-seated. It is incorporated with the entire physical life of the being, and more than that, it is a part of the spirit body, belongs to that, therefore the spirit body is affected by it, is colored by it, if you please. In that way it is translated from the physical to the spiritual world, and affects the spirit after death. The Indian is the Indian still in color, as in feature and form. The Negro is the Negro still. Question. Then man must have originated in plurality, not in unity? Answer. No, I do not so understand it. I believe that of one spiritual essence God has made all nations of the earth, yea, of all universes, however far distant from this planet. I believe in one principle of life. It is the same in this table that it is in you and me. The Bushman and the Anglo-Saxon in essence are one. In expression they widely differ, but in essence they are one. Question. Whence comes divergence of complexion? Answer. Climatic influences produce this in a very large degree, outward circumstances. The conditions of a race produce its characteristics, organic and otherwise. Question. What will be the result of the large emigration to this country, to the poorer classes, in years to come? Answer. It must result in the elevation of the Anglo-Saxon. It is a well-known fact that those races that exclude, that isolate themselves from all other races, soon become extinct. They are dwarfed in intellect, and very soon are lost from the face of the earth. That is the case with the aborigines of this country. They are fading away simply for the want of amalgamation with a higher race. The inhabitants of this country are destined to take a grand place in the scale of intellect, and it is principally owing to the tide of emigration that flows from all points of the compass, bringing the physical, intellectual, moral, in fact, the wealth of all the different conditions from which this emigration flows, to this center, sowing the intellectual soil with seeds that will spring up bearing fruit to the glory and honor of the great guider of human events. By William E. Channing, February 10, 1870. Question. It is a well-established fact that the spirit does communicate independent of the animal senses, which indicates two entities. The animal nature has its experience. While we are informed that the spirit is as pure as God. If the above is true, what becomes of the animal life, when it leaves the body, and what will be its future mission? As the spirit has its experience in the spiritual world, which cannot become reconciled with the external consciousness, so, also, the external faculties have their experience in the external world, which indicates two distinct natures, of which I desire an explanation from our invisible friends. Answer. Round and round the circle runs. Spiritually and physically, we seem to be perpetually repeating ourselves. In other words, we move in circles, rotate forever and forever around the great central sun of all being, of life. The soul, the spirit, to me these are terms seeking to express but one idea, while it sojourns in the tabernacle of physical life, must express itself in accordance with the laws of this physical life. It is a power playing upon a machine. You would scarcely understand me were I to tell you that you, every one of you, as spirits, stand outside and apart from your physical bodies, and play upon them as a musician would play upon an instrument. But it is so. The animal life, or electrical vitality, that belongs to the body, does its share of the work in keeping in tune all the functions of the animal body. It does not think, it does not express itself intelligibly, it does not aspire. It can be inspired according to its own degree, but it never aspires. The spirit body and the spirit are one. The animal body and animal life is another distinct entity, precisely as the instrument is the instrument, and the performer is distinctly separate from it. The dual nature of humanity is being slowly understood. Step by step you are coming into an understanding of what you are, but growth in this direction, as in all others, must be slow. You cannot readily understand how you, as an individual, can be in two places at one time. Many of you do not believe this, but it is a fact. The body may be here, the spirit thousands of miles away, communicating with its friends, talking through its spirit body. The science of this world is slowly rolling away the stone, and by the angel will appear in fair, white robes. You will understand yourselves better, and as you understand yourselves you will understand your God. But it is not for me or any other spirit, however exalted they may be, however wise they may be, to return, giving you what knowledge I may have upon the subject. It must grow up with your consciousness slowly, in order that you may understand and appreciate it. Question. Don't you think the artificial adornments worn by men, and especially by women, detrimental to the normal growth and development of the human spirit? Would it not be better to adorn ourselves more in harmony with nature and physical health? Answer. The human race, without exception, is endowed with the love of the beautiful, from the rudest savage to the most highly cultivated mind. The soul instinctively worships anything that is beautiful, whether it be a rose or a work of art. This love of the beautiful causes all this display of dress that we see in every age. Whatever an individual conceives to be beautiful, that they desire to appropriate to themselves. The savage thinks he looks better when he is in full paint, so he paints himself. The modern belle thinks the same, so she paints herself. The savage and the modern belle both gain their love of the beautiful from nature and nature's God. As yet, they do not know how to fully and perfectly express this love. When they do, they won't paint their faces. and in all probability they won't load themselves with useless articles of dress. I say, when they learn better, they won't do this. But by slow degrees, man, in the external, comes to know of the gems, and their glory and their use, that lie in the internal of his being. This love of the beautiful is one of the most beautiful of all God's gifts to man. But at present it is poorly understood, and is therefore made an idol of. Question. It was stated last week, by the controlling influence, that punishment for wrongdoing in this life was inflicted by another for the same in spirit life. Now, if repentance has been experienced by the wrongdoer here, will his punishment be permitted to extend in the other life by any revengeful spirit that might have power to inflict punishment? Answer. There are ignorant spirits outside, as there are inside, of physical bodies, and so long as there are, we must expect exhibitions of ignorance. Let me illustrate. Mr. Answer, in this world, fancies that he has been injured and perhaps he has, by Mr. B, and he desires to be revenged upon him. He thinks he has not been punished for his crime towards him. They both come to the spirit world. Perhaps Mr. B has repented of his evil, and, according to his own conscience, has paid the penalty in deep remorse. They both appear upon the stage of spirit life. Mr. Answer feels that Mr. B has wronged him, that he has not been punished. He desires to inflict punishment upon him, and he has the power to do it. So he does it. But he would not do it if he were wise enough to see that the man had already been punished, that he had suffered, and that there was no necessity for more suffering, that he had been his own judge, and had condemned himself, had paid the uttermost farthing, and, according to his own light, had gone clear. But Mr. Answer does not see this. He is ignorant, and so desires to take God's work out of his hand, as many do in this life. So he goes to work to punish him, deals out to him what he supposes to be a just punishment. Spirits have the power to do this in our life, as they have to do it in this. Question. We see at funerals both the dead and coffin covered with flowers. We make our graveyards beautiful with them. And on all occasions, whether joyful or the reverse, we invariably have flowers, if it is possible to procure them. At your circles you request those interested to bring flowers. Now, we ask the question, what is the meaning of it? Of what use are they? Answer. Flowers cannot fail to inspire the soul with a love of the maker of the flowers, cannot fail to lift the soul, even though it be transiently, a step higher in the scale of being. You desire to be lifted beyond sorrow when your dead are before you, and so nature instinctively calls for flowers. On your occasions of joy you desire to be still more joyful. Nature again calls for flowers. One writer has truthfully said they are the language of the angels. They talk to the soul of God. As you rise higher and higher in your love for God and the beautiful, you will love flowers more and more. By Father Henry Fitz James, February 14, 1870. Question. How is it that questions in sealed envelopes are answered by other spirits instead of the one to whom they are addressed? Answer. Allow me to explain the process. In the answering of your letters, some spirit who is best adapted to the work is selected to take control of the medium, either partial or entire, as the case may be. That spirit is then, to all intents and purposes, a dweller in physical life, here with you. At the same time he is in connection with those invisible ones who are your guests at this place. The spirit who is answering the letters cannot see beyond the external any more than your medium, any more than you could. He knows only what is upon the external, what appeals to the eye, nothing more. That is why it is necessary for some name to appear upon the envelope, either of the spirit you desire to call or your own name. Then the spirit who is answering the letters calls out silently, to be sure, but potently to the spirit, the name that is upon the envelope. If anyone is present that can respond to it, they do so. If not, The envelope is generally laid aside, they being unable to answer it. It would consume a much greater length of time and a much larger amount of magnetism in order to have each spirit who is called for come forward and control the medium, and give the answer. Perhaps 7 times out of 10 they would fail in the attempt, so one is selected who can serve as amanuensis for all the rest, it being easier for the medium, easier for the spirits who desire to give an answer. We have only just so much time at our command, and just so much magnetic power that we are at liberty to use up. Question. I have been informed frequently that children, dying when quite young, progress and learn in the spirit world the same as when living. If so, why is it, as I have noticed in several instances, children that have passed away many years come back and control the medium, and talk childishly, and indistinctly, the same as when here? Answer. Such manifestations are not normal, they are abnormal, even to the spirit who produces them, they are given to appeal to your past lives. For instance, you knew your child as a little child. It has grown to maturity in the spirit world, but it desires to appeal to your consciousness, to be remembered. Consequently, it comes to you as it was when here, as nearly as it is able to. If they came to you as they are now in spirit, you would find that the same progress had been made by them as spirits that would have been made under proper circumstances in physical life here. By Theodore Parker, February 15, 1870. Question. Have our spirits been clothed with mortality previous to the present existence? Answer. Many of you. What is true in one case is not in all. Some of you have doubtless but just started on the highway of human experience, others have traveled a long distance that way. Question. After our spirits have passed from this body, will they ever return from the spirit land to dwell again on the earth? Answer. It is my belief that they will. Question. Can a man live so well in this life that he can overcome many of the laws of nature, as Christ is said to have done? Answer. I do not believe that Christ did overcome any natural law. I believe that he, understanding the law, acted in harmony with it, made it his servant, did not overcome it. Question. Was it by the perfection of his nature, by a spiritual approximation to his Father? Answer. I believe that had a great deal to do with it. Question. Did it not have all? Answer. No. Question. Is it an accident of nature? Answer. No. Question. An incident of nature? Answer. Yes. Question. Can one transmit this nature? Answer. Yes, I think so. The more holy you are, the more confidence you have in yourself, the more positive you are. Jesus, if he lived a blameless life, of course had confidence in himself. He felt that he should have whatever strength was necessary to the production of any great work, whether it be of mind or matter. Confidence in one's self is absolutely necessary to its performance. Question. Did his perfect humanity enable him to be more fully connected with the law of nature? Answer. Certainly. He attracted to him those high and powerful intelligences that could best aid him in his work. Question. The consciousness of doing right gives extraordinary powers. Answer. It certainly does. Question. Did Jesus rise from the tomb in his natural body? Answer. I do not so believe. Question. What did he mean, then, by saying, a spirit hath not flesh and blood, as ye see me have? Answer. He meant that he had adorned himself with a physical body for the time being. He did not say he had taken the old body that had been crucified and laid in the tomb. He had gathered to himself by his knowledge of natural law those elements that would appeal to physical sense. In other words, he made himself a physical body, through which he could temporarily act. They did not see his spirit, only that body. Question. Do prayer and fasting perfect one's nature? Answer. Yes, provided you pray because you feel that you ought to. A great many people pray because they have been taught to believe it is right. That is no kind of honest prayer, will never avail anything.